This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello, and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 31st of August, 2021. A very interesting divergence in Asia overnight. But first, let's recap very briefly the U.S. session, which is interesting because, of course, the strength we're seeing of late, yet another all-time high posted yesterday. And as I point out in the slide, slide two on the S&P 500, we're kind of accelerating here beyond the sort of pace. It's already a very solid pace of gains we've seen in the markets this year since the spring. With this latest couple of days rises accelerating beyond that trend. And I think that's quite interesting because it's quite rare for this to happen. And a couple of prior episodes, that take some time after this started occurring for these to happen. But if you look at the last couple of episodes, it was sort of subsequently saw some pretty hefty volatility coming in, two-way volatility. I wouldn't be surprised to see something, some kind of shock getting this market in more of a two-way mood soon. And those two episodes were, by the way, around September of 2020. Obviously, some of that volatility linked to uncertainty around the U.S. election. And then a bigger one was back in early 2018 when we saw remarkable acceleration beyond the trend. I remember there were some volatility selling strategies, ratioed selling strategies of call options back then that got into trouble and might have been behind some sort of desperation buying to cover those. I don't know if there's some similarities with what's going on now, but we should be cautious around these accelerations beyond trend. I think they're actually a sign of impending volatility rather than a new phase of extra additional excitement in this market. So you can see the sector or the equity theme breakdowns we have on our usual chart on slide two. You see bubble stocks leading the way yesterday in the U.S. And then overnight, just to briefly recap, we saw the Japanese market and most Asian markets were quite up again, but China actually quite another solid negative session overnight, in part on a 47.5 reading for the non-manufacturing PMI. This was worse than expected. It shows how the COVID variant outbreak was really impacting the services sector. And of course, we've seen all these regulatory moves from China as well. I think that's adding in here. But this rally, this recent rally in Chinese equities has pretty much been erased. So we're back to sort of square one there. Really interesting to see what happens next. And as we've outlined at the start of the week, we have a very busy week ahead on the economic calendar front. I'll tell you, I know you're focused quite a lot on the employment report on Friday. Maybe, is it going to provide some counterpoint to what Powell delivered in his speech on Jackson Hole or not? It looks like you're very much sort of two-way on what could unfold here on in the wake of this report on Friday.
Yes, John. So I think that from the Jackson Hole speech, it was clear that the Federal Reserve still puts a lot of importance on job data. And this is why I think that this week is going to be crucial to see whether non-farm payrolls exceed or miss expectations, because it could tell us when the Federal Reserve could announce tapering. We know that it's going to start this year, but it's going to start in October, November, or December. Well, if we have the non-farm payrolls exceeding expectations, we can be quite confident that an announcement would arrive as soon as the September FOMC meeting with tapering starting in October. So what would happen to 10 years US Treasuries? Well, I take you to slide three. In that case, we expect US Treasury yields to rise and test the level of 1.5% ahead of the FOMC meeting. And because we expect the reflation trade to be back alive in the fourth quarter of the year, after a slowdown, yields will continue higher to break 1.70%. In case non-farm payrolls jobs miss ESPIN estimates, there is still room for a bond rally right? In that case, what would happen? You see the trajectory there, always on slide number three. Well, I expect 10 years to fall to test support at 1.12%. And if they break that level, they can fall as much as 1%, but then it's going to be inevitable for them to rise on the fourth quarter of the year when tapering starts and is going to be more aggressive than the market expects.
Yeah, there's so much going on in the fourth quarter, also with the Treasury issuance. And as well, such a key inflection point we're coming up to with these benefits expiring in early September and how that shapes up for both the retail spending, because let's talk about, you know, the size of those benefits relative to some of these lower income folks out there that have actually seen their incomes rise and the response to the pandemic on those special extra benefits. That combined with the Treasury issuance, it's going to be a very interesting quarter. And the Fed essentially saying that we're there in terms of reaching our targets on inflation, but it's the employment stuff that's allowing us to continue with our policy. We do have the ADP payrolls tomorrow. Those are not always a good predictor of the official non-farm series, but the big ADP private payrolls for August is up tomorrow as well. And then on the fixed income front in Europe, we saw a bit of a pop in yields last week in Germany. It looks like that's come under pressure again. And that's despite this really high inflation reading, as you point out on slide four. I guess the focus there was on the month-on-month because the year-on-year was at the highest in almost 30 years.
Yeah, exactly, John. But the thing is that the monthly data showed that inflation increased only 0.1% in August. And that's the lowest point since November last year, showing that inflation might be actually slowing down, despite that headline numbers is very high because of a Fed a base effect since numbers last year were so depressed. But this opens up to quite a favorable market for European sovereign bond issuance, which is starting again this week after the summer lull. We start today with Italy issuing 5 and 10 years BTP. Then we have Germany tomorrow with a 5-year bubble auction. And on Thursday, we have Spain issuing bonds from 3 to 30 years. And France with a 10 years odds. I expect all these issuances to be quite fairly well bid. Probably the ones that are going to be more critical are going to be the 15 and 30 year Spanish bonus and the 10 years odds auction that are going to be on Thursday.
All right, we'll have to watch for that. And then Ola, on the inflation front, certainly one input price causing concern all around in Europe is this whole natural gas situation. We were talking about this morning, early this morning. What's the situation there? Are we still quite at the highs of the cycle?
Most certainly. We just put a note about that in today's quick take, which you can find on Twitter and on our website. We are seeing surging prices continue. And then now we had the Idas hurricane over the weekend in the US, which has raised concerns about the short-term export possibilities for LNG out of the US. So yes, we are seeing surging record high gas price in Europe, tight supplies from Norway and Russia, strong demand as we recover from the pandemic. But that's basically leading to surging electricity prices and higher coal prices and higher cost of emission. The carbon offsets, they basically reached 60 euros a ton yesterday. So whether the energy input to into price inflation in Europe is transitory, that clearly remains to be seen, because we are heading into a winter with the stock levels of gas at the lowest level in decades. And that basically means we could have another supply crunch. So that's one we need to keep an eye on. But generally, the oil market is pretty elevated. We recovered very strongly from the mid-August slump. Pandemic seems to be having a fading impact. Case counts are starting to peak out, and we're seeing the impact of vaccinations on mobility. So crude oil is holding pretty near the high end of the recent area here. So look out for that 75 plus area into this week's event, which I think probably most important one is the OPEC Plus meeting tomorrow. The market is expected that they will continue to increase production by 400,000 barrels on a monthly basis into the over the coming coming months. And they still have quite a few million barrels that they need to or they want to push back into the market when the supply and demand situation basically allows it. So oil prices, short term, potential negative impact of Ida because refineries are they have reduced demand due to power outages and less mobility and flooding. But generally, it the market is on a better footing again.
All right. And then just briefly on the FX side of things, how the market is absorbing this. Obviously, in the wake of Jackson Hole, we are getting that weaker dollar coming in here. But it's also interesting to note some patterns elsewhere. So if we look at slide five, you can see the recent performance here across the board on the trend readings. And you look at that the Norwegian krone reading. That is the strongest one, just echoing the strength and energy that Ole outlined there. But you're not seeing it so much in CAD. So just interesting to see the more risk sort of risk correlated currencies in Europe coming back strongly a bit, especially the Norwegian krona, slightly less so the Swedish krona, higher against the euro, which is the real neutral stuff in this market. You can see that trend reading at 0.2 and broad base there. But on the weak side, we have the Japanese yen and the Swiss franc, and the Aussie momentum is sort of slowly improving there, but it's still a negative. And I'm interested to see if the Aussie starts to turn around. I think it's been affected by the scale of the pandemic outbreak there, you know, clashing with that zero tolerance policy. And I posted a Euro Swiss chart here just so you can see how the sort of traditional lowest yielding safe havens have really come under pressure on this latest little pop in risk sentiment. And we're seeing it in some places in the commodities market, this sort of more pro-cyclical outlook. You've outlined crude, but as well the base metals, at least copper, I've seen is coming back. I know the iron ore, Chinese iron ore onshore market is a bit its own phenomenon. Important for Australian dollar, but doesn't always reflect what's going on elsewhere. But it looks like there's some pro-cyclical feel in some of these metals as well.
Yeah, because I think we've been very focused on obviously what's going on in China, rightfully so, given it's such a major consumer of industrial metals, and we've had the pandemic as well curbing risk appetite in this cyclical sector. But there's another report out from Goldman Sachs overnight. They are obviously probably out in front in terms of bullishness, but they're saying that the base metal market is fundamentally mispriced. They see the S&P in the industrial metal index up, potentially up by 24% over the next 12 months. They're focusing on copper, aluminium, zinc, and nickel. Copper, they're looking for a 20 plus percent increase over the coming year. So it is the green transformation that remains a key source of demand that will rise. They also see a through here in Chinese demand. So generally a strong market for metals. And looking at the chart here on the what's interesting, obviously, on slide nine is that we've seen the speculators basically leaving the building. I put in the speculative the cut report on managed money positions in high grade copper, and you can see that even though the market is we had a correction, but we are not far from the peak. The speculative length is close to neutral almost. So there's plenty of room to accumulate new longs if we should see a strong momentum start to come into that. And I think just finishing off in the metal space, the same thing goes for gold, which is basically, I think, being held down by the fact that we got this very strong stock markets that you mentioned, John. So what is really the need for diversification when your stock portfolio just continues to make new highs? So gold needs to do it on its own. And for that to happen, we really need to break above that 1835 area, the triple top we had back in July and early August. If we take that out, well, then it's quite clearly on the chart. The next key area of focus or interest is 1900. So that's one we'll look at. And final, on the right-hand side, the gold-silver ratio. I think it is important because if we should see a pickup in industrial metals, then silver potentially could benefit from that. If we start to see a breakdown in that gold-silver ratio, then suddenly it could potentially be silver leading the rally, whereas just during the recent recovery, silver has really been a laggard.
Yeah, but very quiet, the silver market.
Yeah.
Okay, let's have a brief look at earnings. Just a brief wrap of Zoom Communications yesterday. Their sales forecast, despite reporting a beat on earnings, if I read the information correctly, it was the sales forecast after the hours and their reporting after hours that really saw a negative impact in trading. So it was down more than 10% in late trading. They're on concerns, of course, that their growth level is going to fade off as people return to work and reduce their use of these services. And then focusing on today, we have a couple of interesting companies. So NetEase out of China, an online company heavily associated with gaming, another really negative session there, as we're seeing yesterday, the news out of China, they're going to crack down on the amount that teenagers are allowed to spend online gaming, limiting them to 3 hours a week. This is, of course, very negative for the sector and the company responding in as you would expect. And then we have this superstar of arguably bubble-like valuations, but an incredible growth story, this CrowdStrike, a cybersecurity firm, out reporting. I put the chart up here. You can see how amazingly it's done since the IPO and especially since the 2020 pandemic lows. They are out reporting and they're expected to show their first, print their first positive EPS for the quarter. The company's valued at around $65 billion right now on expected forward 12-month revenue of $2 billion. So just be aware of the valuations before you have a sniff at that company. And then rounding out where we are with the data calendar for today, the most interesting one, and I've talked about it this week, so I don't want to repeat it too much, the consumer confidence number out of the U.S., whether it echoes what we saw with the Michigan number that dropped so heavily in August, is expected 6 points lower, but the Michigan drop was around twice that. So we'll be looking for that, as well as the other bits and pieces you can see on slide 10. I think we'll call it a wrap there, and we will be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.